Hello and welcome to episode number 50 of Gully Cricket to Bounce Wicket podcast. I'm your host Srinivas and I'm joined by Manoj today. First of all, I would like to thank all our listeners on the podcast platform, subscribers on the YouTube and friends who have been supporting us in the last few months. Without your support and encouragement, it definitely would not have been possible to make the 50 episodes, and please do keep supporting us to hit further milestones as well. And a special shout out to all the guests who have come on our show, and most of them, I think, except one, actually Manoj and myself know who it is, but except one, all the other guests have been really, really wonderful, and they agreed immediately when we said we wanted them on our show, and you know, they have been on our show on time, and everyone has been so supportive. So Manoj, coming to you, I would like to know your thoughts on us reaching 50 episodes, and what were your initial thoughts when I bounced the idea of podcast to you? Did you thought that we'll make 50 episodes so quickly?
Not at all. When you first bounced this idea, I thought, okay, this could be a pastime for us, because we were friends in college and we had mutual interests in cricket, and I thought, okay, let's try it out. And what started as a pastime, now it's become every week business. And congratulations for reaching the 50th milestone. I hope there are many more to come. If I look back, we've interviewed stalwarts of the game. It's a great opportunity, I feel, to have interviewed them and talked to them, known their thoughts. It's been amazing. So kudos to both of you, and special thanks to you, Sino, because you've been the backbone of the show. You've been hosting it. You've been preparing all of the stuff while we've been busy with our, work or whatever it is. Thanks for everything.
No, definitely, Manoj. Like you said, I've been doing the back end of the job as well. But without you and Raja, I alone cannot, do an episode, right? So it's a good collective work, and it's really good, going back to your college friends and speaking about cricket, right? Two things I like is cricket and friends, and podcast. This podcast is something, that unites both friends and cricket. So yeah, let's get into the episode. And I'm afraid, Manoj, that all good things to say in this podcast are ending here, and with India team spoiling the mood of our 50th episode by getting knocked out of World T20, right? So we never expected. If you remember, our 50th episode was supposed to be IPL finals review, right? That was our plan.
Correct, absolutely. Yes.
Because of our day jobs or whatever, that we could not finish two episodes during IPL. It got delayed, and then never expected that our 50th episode will be, we'll be talking about India coming out of the World T20 technically, right? Because still they have a chance of 6% as per quick quiz, but I mean, practically, I don't think it is possible. So I would love to be proved wrong, but I don't think it's possible for India to come back in this World Cup. So Manoj, it's been 2 days since our hopes were shattered by Kiwis for second time in the ICC tournament in this year alone, right? So had the feeling sunk in yet? What were your thoughts? And had the 2007 World Cup memories came back to haunt us? So your thoughts?
I had the same feeling. I mean, it's not sunk in yet. I had the same feeling which I had when we lost the World Test Championship, like you said, about 2007, right? Absolutely. They can't be a similar situation. We can draw parallels with 2007 World. We lost two games and we were out against Bangladesh and against Sri Lanka. Similar situation here as well. I mean, I just couldn't believe what I was watching the day before yesterday. It was a must-win game. The spirits were down. I mean, the body language was really not the India that we used to see. It has not sunk in for me, to be honest.
Definitely. I think, again, speaking of 2007, you and me being Rahul Dravid fans is more hurting for us, right? It was his first World Cup as a captain, and then, team coming out. Within, I think, 3 matches India played in that World Cup, they won against Bermuda in between. I think first they lost to Bangladesh and then to Sri Lanka, right? So it was horrible. And then this is something, again, this year India started as favorites, right? India started as favorites just probably you can say 10 days back.
Absolutely.
India were favorites to win this tournament. And just 10 days later, we were just out of the tournament. It's, I mean, really for me also, the feeling haven't sunk in yet. And I really feel this World Cup should get over as early as possible because India is not going to do anything further in this. But yeah, so let's look at the match against New Zealand in detail because we already spoke about the Pakistan match. Let's try to understand where India lost this match. And we are obviously speaking with the advantage of hindsight, but let's try to be as fair as possible. Like most of the times, so we'll try to keep it as fair as possible. So let's get into toss first, Manoj. The story of this World Cup has already been win the toss and win the match, right? So again, in another crucial match like this, India lost the toss. So I don't know, probably we should have a toss captain who has a little bit of luck or something like that. So if you look at what happened at toss so far, I think up till New Zealand and India's match, 8 teams batting first won in 28 matches, right? I mean, balanced 20 matches have been won by teams batting second, which is like only 30% have been won by batting first. And this is fine. Like it's of course more towards batting second. But if you look at specifically Dubai, where India has played both of their, you know, initial 2 matches, so far, no team has won batting first there, right? And it is disappointing to see results having so much correlation with the toss. And I don't know, with so much advancement in terms of technology and in terms of game, we are still depending on some luck or so-called toss. So I'm really disappointed with this. At least there were no, you can say, first group matches in Dubai. So they have enough time to prepare the pitches after IPL. But still, the matches are skewed so much towards batting second. And it's really disappointing. Your thoughts on this?
I think if you look at the pitch itself, it's batted first, have really struggled. It's been this since IPL. Prepare another pitch in between IPL and the start of T20 World Cup. It's really difficult.
Coming to team selection, Manoj, India made one force change and one plan change. So Ishan Kishan is in for Suryakumar Yadav, who is injured, and Shardul Thakur is in for Bhuvi as third pacer. I think we have discussed in the last episode as well that Shardul is must to improve the batting depth, right? Because we need someone who can bat a bit. So, and with Suryakumar Yadav injured, I think Ishan Kishan was obvious choice. I mean, being a left-hander and being the kind of left-right combination that we want in the batting order, right? So, it was obvious choice. And these two changes are fine. I think these two are good changes. But has the choice of Ishan Kishan and KL opening surprised you? I thought Rohit and Ishan Kishan will come for opening.
Well, I wasn't expecting Ishan to open the innings. As soon as I saw, I was really surprised because I thought he came in as a replacement for Surya and would come at number 4. But in the hindsight, we've seen that management decided to bat Ishan to open with Ishan along with Rahul. It's a tactical move, I understand, but Rohit would have been, perfect choice right at the top. Really surprising that Ishan opened the innings, which really didn't work out. If you look at
it. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. But as a whole, if we see as a strategy, the main bowler for New Zealand there was Trent Bolt, right? Who is a left-arm seamer. And probably that must be thinking sending Ishan Kishan up. They have Mitchell Santner as well, who is most likely to bowl in the power play, right? So he is again left-arm spinner. So that could be reason for Ishan to come. But I thought Ishan will be accompanied by Rohit Sharma and Rahul will be playing one down. But again, I don't know what was thinking there. KL Rahul has come out along with Ishan Kishan. But anyway, at the end of the day, Rohit has come in the power play itself. So we need not see him as coming as one down, particularly in that match. So let's see what happened once India started batting. So Ishan gets out in the third over, trying to clear the rope. And Rohit Sharma plays a pull shot on the very first ball, or probably the next ball after Ishan Kishan gets out and dropped by Adam Mill. Right? He got one life and we got like happy. So, but again, India could never get runs in the power play, right? Because there was no big over or something, and they were unable to hit those boundaries. That I think definitely that must be playing in batsman's mind, right? And hardly at the end of power play, India were 35 for 2 and Rahul gets out just before end of the power play. I think with one ball left in the power play, Rahul got out. So Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli are there at crease at the end of power play. And I mean, if you look at India's score at the end of 10th over, India were 48 for 4. I mean, probably immediately in the 10th over or 11th over, Virat Kohli got out. Just first ball after the drinks, he got out. So India were at one stage 48 for 4. Again, it was more or like a deja vu situation to Pakistan match, right? At least in Pakistan match, India were at, 60 at the end of 10 overs. In Pakistan match also 3 or 4 were down, but at least we have a little bit of runs there. And here, batsmen were unable to rotate strike. They are unable to play spin. Rohit Sharma, he got out with 100 strike rate, and Virat was pathetic. I mean, he got out just trying to clear the ball over, long on, and it was pathetic. So your thoughts when you say India at 48 for 4 in a must-win game?
So I think India, were looking to sort of maximize or take full. They were trying to exploit that power play, get as much as they can, set a target of I think 180 plus. Firstly, full credit to New Zealand bowlers. The way they bowled, they gave nothing away. If you see, there was hardly any loose ball, hardly any short of length. All the spinners, I think, put a lot of pressure.
Brilliant fielding effort as well.
Yes. Of course. And when it came to the batting, I think a lot of our batters were picking out fielders. Short selection was good, but they couldn't clear, and they were picking out fielders. If you look at Ishan Kishan's dismissal, if you look at Rahul's, and I think Rohit, he couldn't get the distance that he would have liked to. And
even Virat
Kohli, Virat's was a poor short selection because it was pitched outside off, and it was turning away, and he tried to slog sweep loft it long on, but couldn't get the elevation and the distance. He obviously holed out. If you look at the entire power play or post power play, there was no momentum at all. Nobody was building partnerships, and there was nothing going India's way. And sadly, it continued till the 20th over. Nobody got going, and that's why we ended up at 110. It's pretty clear.
Manoj. Yeah, I would like to break this story into two parts. Like I already said, India were 48 for 4 at the end of 10th over, I think, or 10.1 overs. And you have, let us say, 10 overs left. You have Rishabh Pant, Hardik Pandya, Jadeja, and Shardul Thakur, right? Four of them can bat. So what you expect, and India, remember, India is playing a knockout game in a T20 match, right? It's not a knockout game, of course, but we all know if India loses this game, India is out, right? So you expect batsmen to put at least 100 runs, right? Or at least work towards getting those 100 runs. If they are not able to rotate strike, fine, go for big hits in between, right? Take risk. But India failed to do that, right? The Indian batsmen haven't showed any intent there. Probably this is what Virat Kohli meant when he said, we were not brave enough with the bat and with the ball. Probably this must be the phase that he was mentioning, because whatever the first four batsmen got out, they got out trying to increase the run rate, right? But after 10 overs, what happened, I think I really couldn't understand why, Rishabh Pant and Hardik Pandya were batting that way. I mean, they were not even trying to, try to get runs, right? In fact, they have started doing that even when they are going deep, right? Even if you see at end of 15th over also, India were 75 runs. India had Jadeja and Hardik Pandya batting. So obvious your expectation is they'll go for 50, 60, 70 runs, right? That's how they have to bat. India are good at chasing. There is no doubt about it. But if there is no target, I think it's responsibility of batsmen playing at so much higher level that they should keep their own targets, right? I mean, last 5 hours had they targeted 75 runs. Let us say India would have been ended at 150. Let them get all out, doing that at 90 or something, 90 or 95. Anyway, India is going to lose the match. But taking so much deep and then started hitting from 19th over or 20th over alone will not take us anywhere. I think once the scoreboard looks 110, there is, no second thought, right? India is going to lose this match anyway without an iota of doubt.
Correct.
So this batting approach is not going to take us anywhere. So your thoughts on batting approach in the second half?
I think credit to the way bowlers bowled. I mean, to be honest, they were amazing. They didn't give a single, loose ball. And when someone is bowling that way, how do you come out on top of him? Try and attack, find the boundaries, put the bowler under pressure. That didn't happen at all. They were happy playing singles, twos, which will not get you, it will not take you 220, 130 also. What's the point?
I think we just played to their plans, right? We haven't really tried to derail them. We just played to their plans. Whatever they executed, worked, and then our team just fell into the trap completely.
Exactly. I mean, they were not targeting a single bowler. Let's say, when you prepare for a match, you identify, these are the weak links. You can go after them. I think that sort of plan, I don't know whether they really discussed to go after a single bowler. To be honest, they you're right. They play to the merit of the ball, but that's not enough in T20 cricket, right? You have to take the initiative. You have to go after. In T20 cricket, eight runs per over is like 6 runs per over. Have to make a minimum at least 150 to give the bowler some chance of defending this target. If you're falling below 120, you are out and gone, man. It's done. So I think they didn't put enough pressure on the opposition to make that mistake, and they fell. To sum it up, it was bad strategy from India to play the way they did in the second half.
Yeah, I think people often say, and it may sound a cliche, but still, India plays T20 like an extension of ODI cricket, right? So they don't play a separate brand of cricket in T20. Probably, this kind of T20 cricket maybe right 10 years back, 5 years back, but not today, definitely. I think what works today works well today is what England does, right? It may hit or fail. That's a different story. But the kind of cricket or the brand of cricket that they play is aggressive brand, and that's what is trending now. I think India should try to adapt to that approach. Looking at the bowling, I don't think it's right to find fault or pick something from the bowling unit, right? You have only 110 to defend, and there is no way that you can really defend that, right? And your opposition is already on top of your mind psychologically, and with the Duke coming in there and stats completely against you in Dubai, it's always difficult to point fingers against bowlers in this kind of matches. What do you think?
I think if you score 110, nine times out of 10, you will lose, because they're not enough, just not enough runs on the board, and they're not giving the bowlers enough to defend, because the opposition knows it's less than 6 in over. So it's sort of tailor-made for someone like Kane Williamson to even if there are early wickets falling in the power play, he could take the team through. So I think most of the times less than 6 in over, you will lose.
I think way the other teams are playing T20 cricket today, I think anything less than 150 is not defendable. I think The game has evolved so much that anything below 150, I don't think it's defendable anymore. Let's look at India's chances to qualify for semis, if at all. So, like I mentioned in the beginning, CriQuiz has given, as per their model calculation, 6% of chance for India to reach semis. And if you ask me, I would say 0.5% or less than 0.5%. So what India has to do, first thing, I think India has to win all the three matches, which is against Afghanistan, Scotland, and Namibia, with very good margins, right? It's not about win, it's about big margins. And in fact, we have discussed in the previous episode as well, without a doubt, India has to win all the four matches. And if they lose one, then again, a lot of combinations will come, right? So first thing, India has to win all the three. And New Zealand has to lose against one of them, which is like, I don't know. I'll give again, maybe 0.1% chance. So New Zealand losing against Afghanistan or Scotland or Namibia, right? It's not going to happen so easily. Or Pakistan has to lose against two of them, which again sounds ridiculous with the kind of, you know, cricket that they are playing. I mean, it's very difficult either of these scenarios to happen. So I feel that's why I said India had less than 1% chance to reach semis. So do you think any of these are possible?
Well, India has, like you said, has an outside chance. I don't think Pakistan can lose two games. There's no way. And New Zealand, they have match winners in their lineup, and I don't think they will lose against Afghanistan. Just rule out Namibia and Scotland. I don't think they have the squad to win against New Zealand. But cricket is a funny game. You never know. Let's just hope, as an Indian fan, that they lose against Afghanistan, and we win against all the three teams with huge margin. See, even if New Zealand loses against Afghanistan, we should win all three games and have a run rate over three, to qualify. So India has only outside chance. So I don't think that's going to happen. All these are not something that we can control. The way is just to win the three games and just hope that New Zealand loses against Afghanistan and we get that over three.
Yeah. So at least, see, in the group that India is in, this problem is coming because of the combination of the teams that is there in, right? In group one, there is no such problem like that. Even after losing two matches, there is still very good chance for teams in group one to qualify for the semifinals. Because we have three weak teams, which will become your obvious choice that, you know, Afghanistan, Scotland and Namibia will become weak teams in front of India, New Zealand and Pakistan. That's why the whole scenario of just losing two matches and going out of the tournament is coming. If you see group one, see the kind of teams that are playing in group one: England, South Africa, Australia, Sri Lanka, West Indies and Bangladesh. On their day, any team can win against any team, right? So that's the scenario. But unfortunately, I really never thought of this scenario that India will lose the first two matches and then we'll be out. I was thinking, okay, it's easy. It's an easy group for India and then we can easily qualify for semifinals. But unfortunately, like you said, cricket is a strange game. Anything can happen. So yeah, here we are. Probably packing our bags. So let's see what we have in store going ahead. Probably, players should enjoy playing the balance three matches at least and forget about what is going to happen. And us see. So, once India loses and the two World Cup, you can imagine what sort of reasons or what sort of things people will say, right? So, I'm just trying to put few things and you tell me whether you agree with that or not. Like, these are things which people say on social media, Facebook and all these things, Facebook, Twitter, everywhere. So what could be reason for this defeat? Do you think IPL is, interfering in this schedule, and because of the IPL, players are stressed? Do you think that could be reason?
It could be one reason. Because we've seen even Bumrah say that, you know, there's a lot of bubble fatigue. I mean, it's to do with COVID and not to do with IPL. Because if you look at, I mean, that's cricket. That's how cricket is played nowadays. You know, you have IPL, which there are merits and demerits also for IPL. A lot of stars have been born in this IPL. Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
You know.
And IPL is, of course, Indian Premier League and being played majorly by Indians. But we have Australians, we have South Africans, we have players from England playing, we have Kiwis playing, right? We have like half the Kiwi team playing in the IPL already. But see how they have played. I think, again, if you ask me, in fact, IPL is a good bridge to play the World T20, right? Because you have a mix of players, different players. If they play a bilateral series, let us say they are going to face only one team, right? Only one proper, team. But if they play IPL, their batsmen have to face bowlers from different countries, from New Zealand, Australia, England, whatnot. So I think it's completely wrong to really spot IPL here. In fact, we played in Dubai itself, right? We played in UAE only. So which is again kind of practice for
perfect
players to get into board. So I really don't think IPL could be the reason for this kind of thing. And second point is batting approach. So your thoughts, do you think India lost because of kind of batting approach that they followed?
Yes, in a way, yes. I think, like I said, they were looking for a big target, maybe 180, 190, and in the process lost a lot of wickets and they couldn't recover and ended up with one dead. Maybe the approach to, you know, maybe score 140, 150 might have worked, and maybe eventually would have got 160, 170, which is a, you know, a competitive target on that pitch. I think batting approach is to fault in this case in a way.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you ask me, I think bad approach, I probably will give majority of the reason or prominent reason for India's loss in this World Cup is because of the batting approach and a little bit of luck as well, right? Luck was definitely not in our favor. And correct. We have played both the games in Dubai and we have lost both the tosses and both the times we were put to, bat first. So not only India, I think before the start of the episode, you and me discussed about Vikram Rathore's interview as well. I think he also mentioned there that not only India, the other teams also who played first in Dubai have struggled there. And that's the fact. Whether we agree or not, the fact is fact. I mean, teams playing first have struggled. But again, coming to World T20 and having an ambition of winning the World T20, I mean, teams should be able to, you know, really come out of these kind of situations. Because this kind of situation, for us this time, it happened in early stages. It could happen in your final. It could happen in your semi-final as well, right? Any day that can happen.
Right. I mean, if you look at the teams that have played second, for example, New Zealand, they scored the 110 runs in 14.3. I mean, are we seeing a different pitch altogether? What has happened for the first 20 overs and what has happened in the next 20 overs? Completely different. I don't know why is it so different and why the batting first have struggled. I have no idea because it's the same pitch. I don't know if the pitch is
I think there could be different reasons. One is you must be coming in. Second thing is batsmen know what they have in store, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They know they can approach it aggressively because at the end of the day, they have to score 110. It's not 160, 170, 180. So sure. Even if sure. 2 wickets or 3 wickets or 4 wickets fell, they can still chase that, right? It's a chaseable target. And it eases a lot of pressure on players' minds, right? So when your target is less and even if they get 2 overs of complete dot balls, they need not bother, right? I mean, if they want to attack some bowler, they can attack. So the whole dynamics of the game changes once you see the target as, you know, 111. So that could be one reason. I'm just trying to guess what could have been happened between the first innings and second innings. Of course, like many people say, pitch would have got eased out a bit, probably whatever that, moisture or something that is there in the pitch after 20 hours, definitely it would have eased out a bit. So we don't know. I mean, we are not there at the ground or we are not experts on it, but we are just trying to see what's going on the internet and trying to put things together. So, I mean, with this kind of batting approach, I think it's very difficult for India if they want to win World T20, right? So, and I don't think it's right to blame IPL for everything that is happening in this world, because IPL is so visible and so famous in the world that whatever happens with the Indian team, and everyone started pointing fingers towards IPL. They say, you know, BCCI is arrogant, BCCI is rich, they don't care about anything other than IPL and whatnot.
Let's not forget a lot of these stars who are playing for India, they've started with IPL.
Of course.
Bumrah, Rishabh Pant. I mean,
yeah.
Most of them.
Hardik Pandya.
Hardik Pandya, of course.
Yeah, and tomorrow we might see Ruturaj Gaikwad.
Yeah, definitely. So it's unfair to blame IPL for this because, I mean, in this case, it was a perfect preparation for T20 World Cup. We cannot fault IPL.
So again, this is going to be our last series for Ravi Shastri as head coach. So, I mean, frankly, he has done wonderful work with this team across formats. And it's sad to see him going or having send-off in this kind of scenario. So, your thoughts on Ravi Shastri?
He's been excellent along with Kohli. I mean, over the years, we've seen how well the team has played under him. I think he gives them full freedom to express themselves. And we have seen the results. They've come out with flying colors. It's sad that he's going on this, leaving the team on a sad note. But then one cannot forget the kind of matches that we were able to see. I mean, for me, it stands out as the Australia series last year. How the team has bounced back. I mean, we've seen over and over again the Indian team bounce back, especially in test matches. So full credit to him, what he's done to the Indian team as a coach. Hope we will see him again sometime as a coach.
So one thing, Dhoni, this is the first World Cup as mentor. Probably if you want to, you know, look something positive out of what happened in this World Cup, if you know the fact that Dhoni's first World Cup as a player was 2007 World Cup, and you know what happened thereafter. So this is the first World Cup for Dhoni as a mentor. So let's hope and wish that he mentors many more and he'll bring the same success as what he has brought as a player to Indian team. It's only, you can say, a wish from fan point, nothing else.
Because definitely. I mean, he brings a lot of experience to the table, and the kind of skills that he can share to the youngsters is invaluable. So let's hope that he takes that mentor role if offered in the future, and the team can get benefited.
That really brings us to one elephant in the room kind of question, Manoj. What's next for this team, right? So what kind of approach that this team should take going ahead, like, right? So we have another World Cup in less than 1 year of time, or probably 1 year of time, and that is in Australia, right? Australia, we have bigger grounds and not smaller grounds like you see in Bangalore or in general India. Australian grounds are bigger. So what kind of approach India should follow? And see, both Rohit and Virat are not the kind of T20 players that they were. We have to, I mean, really agree to the fact. We have to look at the fact that instead of going back and seeing their overall T20 strike rates or their overall, you know, T20 averages, let's look at what they have done in the last 2 years, right? I think that's the kind of approach that we have to take, because we are not winning ICC trophies, and really we have to do some radical things. Otherwise, again, at the worst, what is going to happen? We are not going to win. Anyway, we are not going to win. I mean, we are not winning in the current strategy, right? So, I don't think, frankly, Rohit and Virat together has a place in this T20 team. So, I don't know. It may be big call. It may surprise many. It may disappoint many. But I frankly don't think both together don't have a role in this team. So, Your thoughts?
I mean, to your question, well, I don't, because both are different players. They are not as young as they used to be. But I think they can still contribute to this team in terms of T20. I think Kohli especially has gotten really slow in his approach. Rohit, at least still, I mean, once he gets in, he can really, bludgeon the bowling. But Kohli, I think over the years has slowed down. I think if someone has to, if at all has to be, put out, or I think Kohli would be the one who, I mean, if I have to choose between Kohli and Kohli and Rohit in the team, it would be Rohit for me. But to your question, what's the way forward? I think if they don't qualify, just forget this and focus on the positives and build a team, because in Australia, as you know, the pitches, they're fast, they're bouncy, they don't swing as much as in England, but you can prepare accordingly. You can, there are a lot of players in the bench, groom them and get them ready before that big World Cup starts next year.
See, again, I said as a radical way that Virat and Rohit cannot play together. But frankly, what my gut feeling says inside me, because like I already mentioned, they are playing in Australia, right, next year. So you need players who can quickly put in the gaps and takes those, singles, and who are able to convert those singles into twos, right? More than big hitters, because your big hitters may get caught in the deep, right? Because the grounds are bigger. So definitely, I think what this team should do or will do is they'll try to take different approach to the batting, but I don't think they will change too much into the probably playing 11 or those 15 or 20 members. I don't think they are going to bring some radical new people into the setup and try to change too much, but I think they'll try and see how to improve with the current setup, at least till the next World Cup. Probably if it is not working out in Australia as well, then they might look to bring in some aggressive players, maybe Prithvi Shaw to the opening, some radical things, right? So, but I really don't think this team, will really sack some four or five people from this squad and then bring in someone new. I don't think that is going to happen. And one more big thing, if you ask me, we don't have a proper finisher, right? We don't have a pure finisher or a player who can play the role of, fifth or sixth batsman, or in the other words, I can say, come and hit those 20-25 runs in the 10 balls, right? We have Jadeja and Hardik Pandya, but they are kind of all-rounders here and there, hit or miss kind of things, like maybe someone like Pollard, right? So we don't have a player who gets only probably 3 or 4 chances out of 10 matches, but they have to be effective. I think what India lacks is that kind of a batsman. So your thoughts on that? Probably, I think only player that I can think of from the IPL, at least, Indian player, if you ask me, is only Shah Rukh Khan. I really don't see anyone coming so low and then, within no time hit those 20-25 runs.
So I think, I think off late, they are seeing Jadeja as a possible finisher. I mean, but to be honest, I haven't seen that finishing skill. I mean, he was pretty good at IPL, but T20 World Cup, he wasn't really effective. Pandya too, he's not in his best of form. He's a finisher, but not effective. Like you said, finisher, finding a finisher is not easy. But if they can find someone within that World Cup, it would be amazing. Yeah. Amazing. The definition of finisher for me is Michael Beavill. For me, when I was growing up, Michael Beavill was always the finisher. If right. Someone can do that,
and he remains not out, right? At the end of the day, he remains not out.
Any day, most of the times, the top order will finish off the things for Australia. If they don't do that, Beavill is always there. So it's like I said, it's very tough to find someone of his caliber. But if India can find someone within that time frame, that would be awesome. Right now, we are lacking finishers.
Yeah. And one last question about India team. Who should be our next captain? KL Rahul, Rohit Sharma, who should be our next captain? Or Rishabh Pant?
Very tough question. I've seen already reports that, you know, KL Rahul will be our next captain. These could be just rumors. But to start off, Rohit, for me, Rohit is a great captain. I think captaincy, if you look at his success, captaincy has changed him as a person, as a player. He gets better, he plays better as a captain. So I think Rohit should be given that captaincy role, according to me.
Yeah, Manoj, I agree with you. I think Rohit Sharma, at least till the next World Cup or till the next World Cup in Australia, I think will be a good choice because it will not bring too much uncertainty. He's an experienced captain and he has won IPLs as well. So, I mean, Rohit would be my choice at least till the next World Cup. Probably after that, we can look ahead of him. But I think, yeah, Rohit should be our next captain, ideally. So, I mean, most probably it will be Rohit. I don't think the board will take any radiation at this stage. So, yeah, with Rahul Dravid also getting back with the team, I think let's hope, you know, a few good things to happen. So, yeah, I mean, with India done and dusted from this World Cup, at least let us see what's happening outside of India in this World Cup, right? Let's see what's happening, you know, in points table. Probably next week when we meet, we can speak a little bit of few matches. Not few matches. We actually, by the time, probably if we record on next Monday, by the time I think mostly four spots of semi-finals will be fixed by that time. So definitely, we can just see who has reached semi-finals and their journey. But if we look at, I think, group one, England is pretty much sitting comfortably on top. They haven't lost a match so far. They have played four matches. They have won four. They have a run rate of plus +3, right? Unimaginable, right? They got West Indies probably all out for 50 or 60 runs. And then, you know, they are winning with huge margin. So England is pretty much clear to reach semi-finals. And you have chance for South Africa and Australia as well to reach the semi-finals. And most probably it will be South Africa, if you ask me, because Australia has a negative run rate of 0.6 and South Africa are at 0.7. So Australia's chance is majorly dependent on what South Africa is doing. So again, England, South Africa and Australia. So England is fixed. Between South Africa and Australia, one team is going to reach semis. If you look at our group, again, it's group two. So Pakistan, of course, is going to reach semi-finals and second team most probably, or like I said, 99.99%, it will be New Zealand, right? So, I mean, that's how the points table looks like. So let's see what surprises we'll have in store by the time we meet next week and let's preview semi-finals by then. So may the best team reach us semi-finals.
Yeah, may the best team win.
So that's all for today's episode, guys. Please do subscribe to our YouTube channel and do leave your review on Apple Podcast and follow us on Spotify and Google Podcast to get notified when we release a new episode. Thanks for tuning in and stay tuned for more such interesting episodes. Bye-bye.